and I'm going to tell you about a method for doing non-local weak measurements. Why is this interesting? So what is a weak measurement? Very, very simply. So you take a system, and instead of coupling very hard to the system, you couple very weakly to the system. And it turns out that if you do that, instead of coupling to eigenvalues, you couple to an expectation value. This kind of makes sense. If you do something very fuzzy, then you're going to get averages instead of exact eigenvalues. But you know, the measurement has to be fuzzy, because if we have weak coupling in a quantum system, we're not going to get a lot of information. But it's weak in a different sense. It's weak because, you know, if we take the system and then we measure it, and then we make a weak measurement, and then we measure it again, we're incredibly likely to find it in its original state, at least if we make the same type of measurement. So we ask, is it up or down in, say, the Z basis? Then we make this weak measurement, and then we make a strong measurement, and we ask, is it up or down in the Z basis? We're going to find the result's going to be up with very high probability. So it's non-disturbing in some sense. But you know, this becomes really interesting when we think about a situation where we have system prepared in a state psi. We then make this weak measurement, and then we measure it again, but in a different basis, and we find it's in some state phi. And then it turns out that instead of coupling to the expectation value, we couple to this weak value. And it is a function of both the pre-selection psi and the post-selection phi and this observable that we want to couple to. Now, this weak value, I mean, it's something that we can define formally, and it doesn't mean very much. I mean, this is just a number. But because we have this weak measurement procedure where this thing actually gives us a result, or it creates an effective potential, then we can give it actual physical value. We can say this is a property of the system. So what happens with non-local measurements is the way we usually think about doing weak measurements doesn't apply in non-local measurements. So non-local measurements, just the standard procedure is not going to work just because you have locality constraints. So you know, I'm going to explain all of that. I'm first going to talk about measurements. I'm going to say things that might sound trivial or might sound completely controversial in some way. But I'm going to define what kind of measurements I'm going to talk about. I'm then going to explain what weak measurements are. So in the first part, I'll say stuff about weak measurements, but I won't describe a procedure. In the second part, I'll really describe weak measurements. And then I'm going to show how to do a weak measurement of a strong measurement and how that can be used to do these non-local weak measurements and a bunch of other interesting things. Okay, so I started working on weak measurements with Lev Weidman. And I then moved to work on other things and in more quantum information, things. And I realized that, you know, when people say measurement, they mean different things. So the quantum information people would kind of say, you know, you keep on using that word measurement, but I don't think it means what you think it means. And I'll use three different terms. If you don't like these terms as measurement, you can give them a different name, okay? But these are the terms that I'm going to use. One is going to be a strong von Neumann measurement. So a strong von Neumann measurement is an object that has a quantum input state and a classical outcome. it's going to have some classical label as the outcome. And it's also going to have a quantum outcome. Okay, there is an outgoing state after the measurement. A weak measurement is going to be something that has no classical outcome. It's only going to have a quantum outcome. Okay, this is incredibly important. And the von Neumann scheme is some scheme where you can realize either the first measurement or the second measurement or something else. If I just say the word measurement, I mean this first thing, the Strong or von Neumann measurement, okay? Or what we usually think of as measurements, at least when we doing, you know, second year of university, we're doing our first quantum mechanics course. This is what they teach us is a measurement. So what is a von Neumann measurement? Von Neumann measurement is this box. This is a von Neumann measurement of an observable A. The observable is a Hermitian operator. It looks like this. And what comes out of this box, we put in a quantum state. What comes out of the box is a different quantum state. Not necessarily a different quantum state, but something that could be a different quantum state. And some classical label. Spin up, spin down. And there is some probability that's given by the Born rule, and we can calculate what the outgoing state given the input state. You know, if this is rank one, if A is rank one, then this is all very simple. But if it's not rank one, then you know we have to use this rule to calculate the outgoing state. And we're going to be interested mostly in things that are not rank one. In fact, rank one things are incredibly uninteresting. So how does this work if you think of a classical picture? Okay, so now you have a box and it contains some charge and you want to measure the charge in the box. So what you're going to do is you're going to take an electron, you're going to shoot the electron next to the box and it's going to get somewhat deflected. And then you're going to put something at the end, you're going to click on a detector that will tell you what is the shift in the electron. And then you're going to work out what the charge is. So this is a strong von Neumann measurement. A weak measurement is a different object. It's very similar, but it's slightly different. It's a different picture of, I guess, the same thing, at least classically. In a weak measurement, we have an incoming state and an incoming meter. So the meter is another quantum object. They both go into this box that does a weak measurement. This is not just a weak measurement, but this is a weak measurement with post-selection. Okay, so we post-select the state phi. And what comes out is the meter state that was affected by some, you know, generally this is just a cross operator working on the meter state. This is going to be the measurement result, V. Okay? Now let's think of the electron picture again. We have a box with charge. We want to measure it with an electron. The electron goes through the box. Now it doesn't hit a board at some point. It just gets deflected. It feels a Coulomb potential. And it says, look, according to this Coulomb potential that I felt, this is the result of the measurement. Okay? There is, in that sense, there is no classical outcome to this thing. There's just an operator. Now, if we take this very generally, the operator is the function of the incoming state, the outgoing state, and the operator. We want to do this as a weak measurement, so we're going to say that, you know, this whole object is non-deterministic, and it's going to happen with this probability, more or less, just the overlap between the incoming and outgoing states. And it's going to be a function of, so I said, it's going to be a function of all these things, but to a good approximation, it's going to be a function of the weak value. So we're going to say the weak value has meaning because this operator is a function of the weak value. We now have this potential.
What is the weak value?
So the weak value, I defined it here. Okay. But the weak value is something that, you know, tells you how this potential is going to work or how this operator is going to be applied.
How do you justify this approximation?
Oh, I'm going to work out the details. Well, not too much. I'm going to show a little bit more detail later. For now, what I want to really get across here is that this is the result. You know, V is the result. Now, there is a third thing. It's called the von Neumann scheme. This is a scheme to realize a measurement. Okay? This is not the only way to do a von Neumann measurement. In fact, in some cases, this doesn't apply to a von Neumann measurement. But this is a way to do a von Neumann measurement. We have our state that we want to measure. We have some observable A. We couple it to our meter state via this operator P. And all this does is it says, look, if whatever the value of A is, or whatever the eigenvalue, just push the meter in by this much. Okay, so if the result is 1, we get pushed by 1. If the result is 50, we get pushed by 50, et cetera, et cetera. And what we get is generally an entangled state. So, you know, these guys, unless this guy is an eigenstate of A, we're going to get some kind of entangled state. This is pretty standard measurement. If we want it to be a classical measurement, so a von Neumann measurement, we're going to put all of this inside a black box. We're going to dephase at this point, and we're going to get some classical label. Don't ask me how that happens. Okay, but this happens somehow. We get a classical label. And now we've got this box where this thing goes in, something comes out, classical label. Okay, but again, we can just forget about this phase that actually no one knows how that phase happens anyway. So we can just look at this picture. Okay, so the von Neumann scheme doesn't always work. And what I mean by doesn't always work, you cannot realize any von Neumann measurement using the von Neumann scheme. Okay, so remember what the von Neumann measurement is. We have an operator, we measure, we got a classical label, and the state collapses into an eigenstate. Okay, this collapses into an eigenstate is incredibly important for the next few slides. So let's say we want to measure the operator AB, where A is an operator that's, or A is an operator on a system that's held by Alice, or on a subsystem that's held by Alice, who's on the moon, and B is an operator on the subsystem of Bob, who's on Earth. And now we want to realize this measurement. Well, this Hamiltonian is not physical. Alice and Bob, you know, their subsystems do not interact. Certainly, they don't interact in this complicated three-body interaction. So what do? We can use a different measurement scheme. Okay, we don't use the von Neumann scheme, but we do a von Neumann measurement.
So by a different scheme, you mean you put a different interaction in the system?
I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do something else. I'll show one example later, but what I'm going to show you now is that this sometimes doesn't even make sense. So sometimes you cannot do the von Neumann measurement at all because it's acausal. Okay? So not only can you not do it with a von Neumann scheme, we know that that might be difficult, so you might try another scheme, but there's no scheme that's going to work. Okay? So I'm going to show you how Alice and Bob, who have two qubits, can share information, can have a channel between them that has non-zero capacity by just having someone do a von Neumann measurement. So this is some superior being. He's capable of doing this von Neumann measurement, this non-local measurement. He does it instantaneously. So here, when I say something is impossible, I mean instantaneously. Okay? We can always do things with communication. But now we're going to not allow Alice and Bob to communicate. Someone does this measurement. All that's going to happen as a result of this measurement is the wave function is going to collapse onto the correct state. And they're going to be able to signal each other. And what they're going to do is they're going to give this superior being the ability to measure this operator. So it's going to say, am I in the 1-1 state? Or am I in the degenerate not 1-1 state? So just the identity minus this guy. Okay, so that's a three-dimensional degenerate space or subspace. Okay, so Ellis prepares the state 0 plus 1. Bob prepares the state 1 or 0, depending on what he wants to communicate to Ellis. If he prepares 0, they're in an eigenstate, which means that if we do this measurement, nothing happens. But if he prepares the state 1, they're not in an eigenstate. They're in a superposition of two eigenstates, which means that once you do the measurement, we're going to collapse either here or here. Now Ellis's state is the maximally mixed state. But Ellis can distinguish, at least with many trials, between this state and a maximally mixed state. So the channel capacity is non-zero. So if someone was able to make this von Neumann measurement, he would allow Ellis and Bob to communicate superluminally. And he does not have to tell them the result, okay? By the fact that the measurement happened, we don't say that Ellis and Bob had to know what the result of the measurement is. They don't care what the result is. Okay, so what happens with non-local weak measurements? Well, in the usual way we do weak measurements, we have a very particular scheme for doing the measurement. It has to be weak. The usual scheme for doing non-local measurements, again, you know, not this thing, because this thing cannot be done, but something that can be done, is very strong in some sense, because it requires a very particular interaction. It just doesn't allow, you know, there is this box that can do non-local measurements by doing some strange operations, but you can't really step outside the box. As soon as you try to do something else, bad stuff happens. And you know, for the quantum information people, this is the kind of stuff that happens with quantum error correction. So when you do quantum error correction, you usually try to apply a particular measurement, which is usually a non-local measurement. It's a measurement on a few qubits. And if you do the wrong thing, you might get the right classical result, but if you get the wrong, you project onto the wrong state, the quantum error correction code is going to fail. So the idea to get around this problem is to do the strong measurement, do a weak measurement of the strong measurement, and then just erase the strong measurement. And that's going to give us the right result, but it's going to be probabilistic. Okay, but you know, before I get to that, I'll say something about weak measurements. Okay, so why are we interested in weak measurements? So the question that was on people's mind at the time was, let's say I have a system that's prepared in the state psi. It evolves in time. Nothing happens, so the evolution is just free evolution. The Hamiltonian is the identity. And at some final point, we select it in the state phi. So not the same state. Okay. First, this doesn't happen classically, of course. Okay. At least not in sort of a naive classical picture. And then we can ask, what happened at this time in the middle? Why is this a difficult question to answer? Well, let's say we made a measurement. So we try to sort of retrodict what would happen. Well, we say, let's say we made a sigma z or a sigma x measurement. Well, the result of both of these would be 1. And how do I know this? Well, we start with a 0 state. We make a sigma z measurement. The result has to be plus 1. And now the evolution is time symmetric. So if we end up in a plus state and we go backwards in time and we think we did a sigma x measurement, then the result has to be a plus 1 because this is the plus 1 eigenstate of sigma x. So we get this really strange prediction that seems to conflict with quantum mechanics. We should not have, you know, sigma z and sigma x defined simultaneously. But of course, if I say this, then someone would tell me, you know, Aaron, you're doing something wrong, because obviously the measurement's going to disturb the system. You know, making a sigma z measurement is different for making a sigma x measurement. It's going to do something to your quantum system. You know, and what you should be doing is calculating these conditional probabilities. So you start with the state 0, and then you measure sigma z, and nothing happens, and then, you know, there's some probability that you'll detect plus, and it's all consistent. On the other hand, you start with a state 0, and you measure sigma x. Well, if you got the minus result, you would never find this in the plus state. So if you condition on finding the plus state, of course you must find this guy in the plus state. So, you know, the contradiction doesn't exist. You're doing something that's counterfactual. You know, these two results do not exist simultaneously. So let's try a measurement scheme that does tell us something, but it's non-invasive. It's not going to disturb the relation between this guy and this guy. And this is the weak measurement scheme. So we take the standard measurement scheme, we just make it much weaker. Okay? So again, same interaction. We just apply this interaction for a very short time. So g here is going to be just the time that the interaction is applied for. It's just going to be very short. And you know, the measurement is just going to be some coherent channel. So because we're post-selecting, okay, so we start with a state psi. We do this interaction, then we post-select the state phi. The probability of post-selection is almost unchanged. So it's going to be order g squared, where g is our coupling constant. And that, roughly speaking, happens because we've got this square in the probability calculation. And now, because we started in a pure state, and we project this onto another pure state, and this is going to remain a pure state, we're just going to have a coherent channel. We're going to start with a zero state, and we're going to end up with a zero state shifted by this operator here. Now, this guy, the weak value, is just going to be a potential on this operator. Okay, so if the weak value is real, this is just a unitary operator. And we can very simply say that this is a potential in the Hamiltonian. Okay? So this guy, again, remember these electrons. You've got these two electrons, this electron and the box with charge. And this guy's scattering off. And he's saying, what is the Coulomb potential that I'm seeing? And it sees this guy as a Coulomb potential. Okay. So the weak value acts like a potential. And what are the two properties that I want you to get out of this picture? And these are the important properties for the weak measurement. First, the correction to the probability for post-selection is of order g squared. So again, we have the system, we interact with it, we then measure it in the final state, and our probabilities don't change by much. So now if we try, you know, we run this experiment many times, we can see that the interaction was extremely weak. On the other hand, we get this potential. Again, it's a very weak potential because we have this factor of g. But the evolution is determined by the weak value. So different weak value, different evolution for the median. These are the things that we're going to try and capture in the non-local weak measurement. So again, the weak measurement captures this very, very simply. But we want to apply this in a non-local weak measurement. So people have tried to think about non-local weak measurements, especially regarding Hardy's paradox. So the Steinberg group, Kevin Resch, did this theoretically, and then they did an experiment. And they were able to extract the weak value, but they didn't create the correct potential. So they showed that, you know, if you trust everything else, you can get this number. But, you know, in order to believe that this number is meaningful and has some physical significance, you have to believe that there is some measurement procedure that can actually extract it. Okay? It has to be something more than just a calculation based on other things. So here is how we're going to do this. again, in the simplest case, what we can do is we can start with our state and a meter. We're going to have some strong coupling, so just a strong measurement here. But this is a strong measurement without getting the classical outcome. Okay, so we're never looking at our measurement result. We then weakly measure this guy that contains the measurement result. And then we undo the strong coupling. Okay, because these guys virtually commute, we've done nothing to the system. Okay, again, up to these second order effects. On the other hand, we're going to get the weak value encoded here. The problem is that this doesn't work generally because we can't undo the strong coupling in the non-local case. Because the non-local, the way we do a non-local measurement is not completely unitary. There is some point where we make another measurement and we look at the result and then we correct. So what we're going to do is we're going to erase the result of the measurement using a quantum eraser. So how does a quantum eraser work? We usually have a measurement and we have a meter, and the meter has some pointer basis. That's the basis where if you look at this basis, you're going to get the result of the measurement. So now instead of looking at this basis, you look at the conjugate basis, and you lose all the information that you had from the measurement. Now, because you lose all the information, you've undone the measurement, but what you're going to get is potentially a kick. So there is some probability that you'll get shifted in some unknown direction. This is exactly what happens in teleportation. So what happens in teleportation, you couple the systems, you then make a measurement that gives you absolutely no information, and then what you get on the other side is the correct state up to some kick that you can figure out by knowing everything. Okay, so now I'm going to show an example of making a non-local measurement of sigma z, sigma z. This is a strong measurement. How does the non-local measurement work? Ellis and Bob share some entangled pair. This is not what they want to measure. This is their meter. This is the strong meter that they're going to measure. Okay? So this meter is going to contain the result of the measurement. Each one of them couples to sigma z locally. They just perform a C naught. They say, if my system is in a zero state, do nothing. If it's in the one state, flip my system, my subsystem on this pair. And what we're going to get is they're either both of them do a flip, in which case this system goes back to itself, or only one of them does a flip and the other one doesn't, in which case we get this. So we're kind of utilizing the fact that doing two rotations is equivalent to doing nothing. But doing one rotation is not equivalent to doing nothing. Okay? So this is why a weak measurement would not work, because doing half a rotation and another half rotation is not equivalent to doing nothing. Okay, so now their measurement device encodes the result. Of course, they don't know what the result is. What they'll usually do is they'll locally measure their result. The state gets projected correctly, as in the von Neumann measurement. They don't know what the result is. Then they meet up at some later time, 5 years later, and they compare results and they say, okay, you know, what we got was sigma z equals plus one. What's important is that the state gets projected correctly. Okay, so we do this exact same thing when we want to do a non-local measurement. So now Alice does her strong coupling, Bob does his strong coupling. They do a weak measurement, and then they delete. How do they delete? Well, Alice just measures regularly in her basis. That gives you absolutely no information. So, you know, they're either in this state or this state, which means that if Alice measures locally, she gets absolutely no information about the state. And then what Bob does is after he applies the weak measurement, he erases by measuring the x basis. So now he loses all the information. Of course, if he gets the wrong result, then the whole system gets kicked into an unwanted state. And now they can't correct because we said that they can't communicate. Had they been able to communicate, he would have just had to send one one bit to Alice, and Alice would have been able to correct. But unfortunately, they can't, so he cannot do this. So the scheme is probabilistic. Okay, again, it could technically be deterministic if they were allowed to communicate. There are two reasons it's probabilistic, conceptually. First, the erasure procedure is probabilistic. You can't erase in a deterministic way. And the second is that this applies for any product operator AB. And we already know that these product operators are acausal. On top of that, by just making this weak measurement here a strong measurement, this is actually a strong measurement. So we know a strong measurement is acausal. We know that this, you know, could be applied to perform this acausal measurement, so it cannot be deterministic. But by making it probabilistic, it's no longer acausal, and we don't have any problem. Okay, so to finish, I showed that it's possible to measure these non-local weak values directly. Directly, I mean by using a weak measurement that really creates the desired potential. It doesn't have to be applied to local measurements, so it can be applied to sequential measurements. And that's sort of another interesting scenario where, for example, you can have a double interferometer, one after the other, and then make a Z measurement and then an X measurement. And the product of these things has very interesting, you know, gives very interesting results. And you know, we don't know if we can do this deterministically. So, you know, at least we know of at least some cases where there is no reason it should not be deterministic. But we don't know if this can be done deterministically. And you know, the question that remains is, are there any constraints on why this should not be possible to be deterministically, even say in the simple case of sigma z that we know is technically possible, at least the strong measurement could be done deterministically. So, and again, this goes back to possibly error correction, because in some cases, if we were able to do this deterministically by just using local operations, this might allow some strange things. You know, it might allow us to find information that we should not find about our error-corrected quantum state. So, you know, that might forbid deterministic protocol. But yeah, that's future research. Yeah, that's it.
Going back to the picture of the scheme, do you want to take a picture of that?
Yeah.
So just trying to connect back to the normal sort of weak measurement scenario, you have a pre-selection, you have a sort of weak measurement, and you have a post-selection. So the pre and post-selection, two things at either end.
Yeah.
And everything in the middle is kind of corresponding to that. That weak measurement. And then this probabilistic aspect is a new feature, is that right? Is this something that's not there in weak measurements?
Yeah, so usually a weak measurement is deterministic, and then, you know, it does make some people a little bit unhappy that it's probabilistic.
So if it's sort of probabilistic, like you have succeed or fail?
Yeah.
And if you have succeed, then conditioned on that, is it the case that the measurement hardly disturbs the state.
It's perfectly standard. And if it doesn't succeed, what we get is an unwanted unitary operation. So instead of post-selecting this state, we post-select the state up to a unitary that happened before it. And in many cases, the unitary actually commutes. So you can say that we prepare the wrong state or we post-select the wrong state. It doesn't matter.
And the weak measurement you do in the actual box there that says weak measurement.
Yeah.
So the weak measurement. Is that?
That's just a standard weak measurement.
That's a standard weak measurement. Okay. And then how do you change this scheme if you wanted to do the sequential case? Do you have the actual, have you written down the scheme for the sequential case?
Yeah. So what, I can draw it. Yeah. So we want to measure sigma x and then sigma z.
And you, are you imagining there's a measurement in the middle, possibly? Like something happening in the middle?
No. I mean, something can happen in the middle. That's okay, but and then we have our system psi, and then we couple it to meter one. So here we're doing a sigma x measurement. So we just do a control x. So this is a control conditioned on sigma x. So this is just going to take this and shift it according to sigma x. And then we have this meter two, and we're going to do the weak measurement here. And then these guys are going to continue, and here we're going to erase it. So we just lose the information that was encoded here, so we don't know if this was sigma x. So far, this is the procedure that I have is not deterministic, but I think it can be made deterministic. So in this case, I don't see any reason why it should not be deterministic. Might require like another ancilla or something, but because we're measuring this operator, so this is what I said about non-Hermitian operators. Now the weak value is going to be phi, sigma x, sigma z, psi, sigma x, sigma z, phi over phi psi. But this guy is just I sigma y, and this is not a Hermitian operator. Okay, and this is pretty obvious for these pre- and post-selected systems where you can measure non-Hermitian operators. And then if you want to write this whole thing as a as an optical circuit, it kind of looks like this, where you've got some input state going here. This is a beam splitter. This is a beam splitter. These are mirrors, and you're measuring, either this path or this path, or you can do something even more interesting and say, am I in this particular path or am I in the other three? So this is again it seems like a non-degenerate operator, and I'll use a different color. So. Let's say I ask, am I in this path or am I in the other three? The other three will interfere with each other and we'll get a result. And we can get something similar to the three box paradox, where if we ask this question and if we ask a different question that's not compatible with it, am I in this path? We will get the result yes, with certainty for both of these paths. And again, the weak value will be one in both cases.
And what about, so you've got sort of the causal situation where you have two measures from both non-opposite and two sequential.
Yeah.
What about an arbitrary causal scenario where you have many coefficients, maybe?
I don't see any problem with applying
arbitrary.
Yeah, I don't think there should be a problem. So generally, if you could think of how to make the strong measurement, then that's the big result. If you can think of how to make the strong measurement of this thing, then you can think of how to make the weak measurement. So if there is a cross operator that describes what you want to measure, then you can make the weak measurement too. Yeah.
For the sigma z example, why can't you undo the measurement by having both parts of the difference?
by doing the C not again. That's what I thought at first. So the problem is that this doesn't work if Alice doesn't make a measurement at this point. So after a strong coupling, there should actually be a measurement here for Alice. If Alice doesn't perform this measurement, then when you sort of do the weak measurement and then you undo the C not, something, the interference basically disappears, the interference that you wanted. And you just coupled to the wrong operator. So it just doesn't work. So the procedure really requires Alice to make this measure. Again, I don't know if this is a fundamental reason or if it's just, you know, I didn't think of the correct way to do this, but yeah, playing around with it, I couldn't find a solution.
Okay, there are no more questions at this time.